Hey, yo, what is a cypher?
I think that's horrible when MCs try to reach for the punch, because we can hear it.
The knowledge of the cypher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cypher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cypher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cypher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 172, a talk with Joe Budden. Joe is a rapper from The Cypher's original home state of New Jersey. He first came to prominence in the mixtape scene of the early 2000s due to an affiliation with DJ Clue's Desert Storm crew, which also included Fabulous, The A-Team, and more. Joe's 2003 debut self-titled album yielded a smash hit with Pump It Up, but the record's sales didn't match expectations, which led to problems between Joe and his label Def Jam. Problems that would play out across the rapper's increasingly popular and well-regarded Mood Music mixtape series. Joe's introspective, heavily personal style won him a devoted fan base, one that he reached out to directly via the internet well before that became the standard thing to do. He nurtured those fans by continuing to release superb projects like Padded Room, A Loose Quarter, and No Love Lost. But he also expanded into new realms by appearing on the television show Love & Hip Hop on their 2013 and 2014 seasons. On that show, as well as Couples Therapy, which aired the following year, Budden's complicated love life, which most knew only from his songs, played out on the screen for the world to see. Joe has also moved into podcasting recently with his popular show I'll Name This Podcast Later. Joe's new album, out this coming Friday, October 21st, is a collaboration with the producer A-Rab Music called Rage and the Machine. We talked to Joe Budden at Crosstown Studios in Harlem. And no, we didn't mention Drake. There are plenty of interviews you can check out if you want to hear about that. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cypher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes. Once you do that, you'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, listen to our interview with another rapper who started out on mixtapes and knows a thing or two about slaughterhouses, Nino Blessed, on episode 82. Also consider helping the show by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you a show every week takes a lot of time and effort from me and Josh, and we really need your support to continue to maintain this level of output. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share some bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to our guests after the main interview is over. For November, we have some very special unreleased Wu-Tang Clan coming your way. Become a patron by October 31st to get access to the file. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, both on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's New Jersey's own Joe Budden.
Hey, and we are live.
Still got the radio voice.
Yeah, they tell me I have a radio. I get radio voice. I get substitute teacher. I get bill collector.
Well, you know, I brought you here, you know, big fan, but I am really here to ask about the most important aspect of your career, which is putting on maybe one of the most talented artists of our time, Killer BH.
Killer BH, man.
Yo, Killer BH.
Yo, what really hood, son?
Spit that shit, son.
Yo, my name is Brandon, and I'm the best. Laying down crack music, coming from my chest. All around the hood, they know I'm the man. Y'all ain't hot. I cool y'all niggas off like a fan.
All right, son.
He's been fiending to get another verse out there as well, so I'll send your regards.
Yeah, but actually, can you talk about him for a minute? Because I think it's like, you know, Mood Music as a project, it's very serious, and then you have kind of the Flavor Flav to your check, right? This comic relief that kind of pops in.
You want to hear it? Here it go. Killer BH, yeah, I'm like Jordan. Can't stop me, look at how I'm scoring. Chopping up niggas like they confetti. Drinking ST, looking crazy, mad sexy. Brandon bright like Crayola crayons. And I gotta go to the tanning salon because I'm light skinned.
How'd you get the idea to do that?
Well, you know, periodically throughout my career, I can pinpoint when a mockery was being made of whatever was trendy or current. And Killer BH at that time symbolized that. He symbolized the just rapper that was a little loud and wacky and wasn't really saying nothing, but thought that everything that he was saying was amazing and it was hot fire. So, and then it kind of just stuck. I don't even think him nor myself expected it to stick the way that it did.
Right.
But it definitely brought a much lighter mood to a very dark body of work.
Right. No, it was good. It was neat in that you'd have a catchphrase that he would promptly make fun of, you know.
Yeah.
Are you in no shoes yet?
Yeah, the people should be jealous. I've heard so many unreleased Killer BH verses that they've haven't been privy to.
Nice. But you know, I wanted to kind of start out what was a lot of people's first introduction to you, which is kind of the mixtape era, Desert Storm,
yes,
you know, DJ Clue type stuff. How did you first hook up with that crew?
You know, as cliche as it sounds, it would be I kind of knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. Well, I don't know if that's cliche today in technology world, but
right.
Back then it was very...
You didn't at somebody who
added
somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but back then, my godbrother, who's from Queens, and I was living in Queens for quite some time, he knew some other gentlemen from Queens, and it's very close-knit culture and community in Queens. So one thing led to another, and my music was in the hands of DJ Clue and Skane and Web and Nitty and some other people who were able to lend me a helping hand.
Okay. And so during that period, it kind of seemed at least to go by what was on the mixtapes, that it was a lot of you with the A-Team, a lot of you with Fabulous.
Yeah.
Those were kind of the guys.
My guys, yeah.
Nice.
And Stack Bundles, rest in peace,
of
Ransom.
Of course. We'll definitely talk about Stack as time goes on. How I remember the mixtape scene from back then is, as a listener, you would see a guy on track 38 of the mixtape, mm-hmm. and he'd be like, oh, that's the DJ's friend. And
yes.
Then the next tape you get, he'd be on track 32,
mm-hmm.
track 15, and sort of eventually in reverse order work their way up to
yes.
prominence. What was that like from your end, kind of clawing for that space?
That's a good question. That I don't know if many people even know that bottom of the mixtape game that existed back then.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, I never really played the bottom too often, I guess because of how I was introduced. The production company that I was signed with, they were some well-connected gentlemen. So Clue was family, Skane was family, Fab was family at that point, even though I was just meeting all of these people. So on a Clue tape, we were always somewhere in the semi between 5 and 13 area.
Right.
Number one was reserved for Fab or the latest Lox freestyle. And on Envy and the other Cutmaster C's, I tried so hard to give everyone an exclusive freestyle so that you couldn't kind of put it on the bottom because you were also excited about it.
Right. And I re-listened to some of those mixtape stuff before this. And I didn't really remember your rapping on that is very different. It's a lot of gun talk.
I'm just a con and make guns sell dirty. And I throw back bullets like an unsell jersey. Walk with a limp, but I'm good with a toaster. That ain't a gangster lean. That's the hood on my shoulders.
A lot of punchlines every second.
Feds want to maybe erase him because he had a new 40 every week. Called him Casey.
Can you talk about rapping on mixtapes versus rapping on songs? What are you sort of aiming for?
Well, for me, back at that time,
yeah.
I can't say I had ever even really made a handful of songs.
Hmm.
So that was a part of the game that I totally ignored, and probably a lot of people did back then, as far as making songs in the golden era when you came from just the era of spitting.
Right. Because you had 20 seconds sometimes to get people's attention.
Yeah, you had to get to it. So that was something I kind of learned on the fly. Mm-hmm. And listening back, I can hear the different advancements made in cadence and delivery and flow and breath control. I could hear how I was raw, kind of not too defined in certain stages. And, you know, I can just hear it all. I can hear the progression in the music from back then up until now.
And when you started writing songs, which I assume was around the time you're making the self-titled
record. Yes.
What was that like, having to go from, like I said, this thing where your whole goal is to get people's attention and to keep it, you know, keep them by the throat the whole time, to like, okay, now I have to do a song and it has to have an ebb and flow and I'm creating an album. What was that like for you?
I think that is probably where the disconnect and the discourse began between major record labels and the motto that I was being taught anyway, and myself. You were now telling this, you know, we had to be cognizant of so many new things now as a 21-year-old. What was catchy as a chorus? What is a standard verse length?
Not something you were paying attention to on the mixtapes.
Yeah, no. So now we were in a new league, and not only were we in a new league, we were competing with the field. You know, we were competing with, I was competing with my label mates. When we were trying to work Focus, there were 15 other Def Jam records being shopped, all from DMX as DMX and Ja Rule as Ja Rule and Jay-Z as Jay-Z and Ashanti as, like, so to be a new act in that mix and try to learn on the fly, you know, you were teaching these things to a kid that grew up on Big, Tupac, X, M, just people that had made careers out of making a different style and brand of music, which totally went against everything that I was learning and hearing my first time around on a major.
Yeah.
That was lengthy, but that got my point out, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you didn't fully let them box you in on that record. You did have 10 minutes, right, which was sort of the first of your, like, epically long songs.
Just give me 10 minutes. I just need 10 minutes alone. Do not deal with a thing and not answer my phone.
Just gotta enjoy myself with this one cigarette.
This shit in the streets. Just let me smoke this one cig in peace. Give me 10 minutes.
That was us at the negotiating table, and it was, listen, if you give us our three singles, I don't care what you do with the rest of the album. You can do whatever you want to do.
Interesting. It was really that explicit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, 100%.
Crazy.
Things had to be, I'm an information junkie, so things had to be explained to me every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And just when things didn't really make sense to me, whether for right or wrong, I was pretty vocal about it.
So, all that being said, whose idea was Survivor?
Mine.
And my soul is like
living on the edge, homie, ain't no joke. Nah, baby, bro, I don't smoke, but go ahead, play out.
You can like
play
that. I'm good.
And my soul is like.
That was yours?
Yeah. Survivor was a record that I had done much earlier in my career before anyone had ever heard of me. And it was hard. It was two verses, and I always loved the hook, and I always loved the beat. But I thought the verses may have been a bit dated, so we wanted to try something different, and we used it.
Do you think it worked, the singing?
I think it could have been done better, but at the time, I had a polyp. Well, I still have a polyp, but that was when I first learned that I had a polyp, and I was in and out of losing my voice, and we had to finish an album. So Survivor was one of the records that got done. 10 minutes got done with a polyp. I even made mention of it while writing a song on Excuse My Voice, Fan. That's just a sign that I identify with.
Excuse my voice, fans. That should be a sign that I identify with what I'm saying.
Whatever I said in that song, it was really because I was having such a hard time enunciating and articulating because of that polyp.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you talk about that incident a little bit more on the Mood Music tape, on the song you did, kind of about your trials at Def Jam.
Wrap up your album, Joey, it's going out now. Only problem is my voice is going out now. Doc said I need a surgery to fix it, and if something goes wrong, it could be permanently twisted.
Nah.
Now that's something I can't afford. So steroid shots in my ass just so I can record. The more I talk, it's ruining my chords. And on top of it all, now Def Jam wants your boy on tour.
Yeah, that was wild. Like I was seeing a special voice doctor. I wish I knew his name so I could credit him, but I don't recall. And he was giving me steroids just so I could kind of get through it because the album did indeed have to come out.
Wow, sounds like a athlete or something where you're sort of shooting him up just to get him on the field.
Well, yeah, and this particular gentleman worked with so many other. You know, so many, he was well known in his field,
mm-hmm.
clearly one of the best at his craft.
Yeah. There is one song on that first album. It might even technically be a bonus cut and not on the album, but that's so different and just kind of so out of left field that I wanted to ask you about it, which is Porno Star.
Porno Star.
Yeah. It's just a weird song, a very kind of like circa 98 Jay-Z styled flow to my ear a little bit.
Mommy, do you
love dick, caress and rub dick. Love street niggas, love a thug dick. And you don't look like you getting enough dick. But do you fuck in public and suck dick? Are you down with a dick? Clown niggas dicks. When they put it in, do you drown niggas dicks?
Profound niggas. Porno Star, yet again, was another one of the songs from much earlier in my career.
Ah, that explains it.
From like 90, it was pretty early in my, before anybody ever knew who I was and we were playing around. Right. And it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But when my voice went out and I learned for the first time, all right, well, you have to have exclusive content for Best Buy and one for FYE and one for Target. Now, at the last minute, the label and my production company is scrambling trying to find songs with a guy who has no voice. So we had to end up using one of the songs, and one of the songs was Porno Star.
So interesting. So Mood Music, the first one, the whole tape seems like it's you trying to figure out what happened with the album, what happened critically, what happened commercially, and almost to a listener, it seems like you're kind of working it out in real time. Do you think that's...
Is this one?
One,
music,
yeah.
One?
Yeah.
The newer vocals that were recorded for one, that was probably in that phase, mm-hmm. where we were trying to figure it out with the label and where we going and what direction. Everything was in constant motion at that point.
Only thought I'd ever be dope with the pen. Whole first album was real, all broke from within. Got a little bit of fame, I'm in the five top off. Yeah, I'm loking again, nah, I ain't smoking again. Maybe I was too advanced, because the masses didn't go through it firsthand. Maybe they couldn't understand the trials of a kid who never graduated.
From who was going to be at the label to was I still going to be with this production company? Was I going to be here? You know, everything was on its head.
Yeah. And, you know, you have that song that I alluded to before, sometimes called Def Jam Diss on some pressings of the album.
Lil Jon called me for the Get Low remix, but Leo was going through some TVT shit. Then they went and kept Joe off for the Rock the Mic tour. Somebody probably thought Joey would rock the mic more. Left the country, did a single with J-Lo, but with my luck, I knew Columbia would say no. Radio hates fire.
Yeah, I was in Los Angeles recording with Rodney Jerkins and his people out there. What's funny about that, damn, you know who else was there? That I love so much. He's on M's Recovery record, the vocalist.
Kobe?
Kobe.
Yeah.
Kobe was there before Kobe was Kobe.
Right.
And you know who else was there? New Jersey Devil was there.
Oh, okay, you've done mixtapes with and stuff.
Yeah, but this is when I was just meeting him. And I was there just recording with all of the different people. And yeah, we did that Def Jam disc. But because while I was there, I was getting so much new information that was pretty frustrating at that age.
I can imagine. And the thing about that song is, like, now everyone thinks they're a music industry expert, right? Everyone's inside baseball and mm-hmm. wants to know what's going on and whatever. That wasn't really the case back when that first Mood Music tape came out. How did people react to you kind of peeling back the curtain in that way?
They liked it. There was a select group and community of people who really enjoyed that and identified with that style of music the same way I thought there might be.
And, you know, that one of my, perhaps my favorite song on that tape is Bullshit Rappers and Metaphors.
Okay.
It's a great one. And where you sort of poke fun at rappers who are lazy with comparisons.
Fuck with all these metaphor niggas with the bullshit, like I'm flat like plasma. I smoke like forest fires and all this dumb shit. I'm cool like ACs. I bang like bangers. Some dumb shit.
That's when that style was becoming very popular.
Right.
The whole very simple punchline. Just, yeah, no.
There was a period where you kind of couldn't let that go, where in song after song you'd mention like, oh, I bang like bangers.
So let me start doing what dudes like. A nigga in the booth feeling fresh and it's a new night. And I cruise like cruise control. Fuck that, I can't do it, I might lose my soul. Even though it's shit.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. But again, that was the hip-hop beginning to change right before our very eyes. Mm. You know, this is in hindsight now. But at the time, you know, who knew that that would be a style that would stick around for so long?
Mm. Who can you name names of anyone or any lines you heard that really stuck out at you as like the worst examples of that?
No. I mean, it would probably be more difficult to think of what lines you heard that were not examples mm-hmm. of that at that time. That's what the style, that's the style that was being incorporated.
And so what to you, you obviously from the beginning of your career, from mixtape stuff, are always ready with a punchline. What makes a good punchline?
That's probably relative. I came up on a Lord Finesse punchline or a Big L punchline.
I finished the album. I'm still kicking new shit. First step to this, you'll get snapped like a toothpick. And those who think Finesse is in last place, you get the Bozak and the motherfucking gas face. Yeah.
Turn your tux red. I'm far from broke. Got enough bread. And mad hoes. Ask Beavis. I get nothing but head. My game is vicious.
You know, some of the older dudes and that style of punchline, just the more intricate, double meaning, wordplay. Syllable flip. So much goes into it. The context, the entendres. So, but when you say something simple like I'm blue like the sky or something like that, I don't know. But, you know, on the flip side, you have people who that style is genius too. So, I mean, I'm all for the yin yang mm-hmm. in the universe.
Right. One other thing you do as a rapper that jumped out at me kind of revisiting your catalog a lot for this is you'll take a saying, an idiom, an expression, and kind of like put a twist on it for a line. You know, the most famous or the one you've used a bunch of times, why try to fit in if you're a standout?
Wise way beyond my years, here's the motto of a man, child. Why try to fit in when you stand out?
Love that one.
If you're the only thing real, you're the only thing fake.
When you're the only thing real, really, you're the only thing fake.
That one is still confusing for some people.
So when you hear someone say expressions, if I were to say, you know, right now, like, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, are you like twisting it around, trying to figure out a way to flip that? Like,
no.
No.
No, not at all. But some people do. I wait until it's relevant. Mm-hmm. To something that I either heard or am experiencing personally. I think that's horrible when MCs try to reach for the punch, because we can hear it. Mm-hmm. Like, we can hear when you're reaching for the punch.
Yeah. You obviously, a lot of your songs are super personal, but I was going through some old interviews and I saw one from like 08 where you let slip that you were, at least at the time, doing some ghostwriting.
Yeah.
So as someone who in your released catalog that people know is so tied into being Joe Budden and Joe Budden's life, even more than most rappers, what is it like writing material for someone else?
I can't really say that. But when I'm rapping per my hand and my pen and my thoughts, I'm giving through my eyes. And just when you write for someone else, you try to give it through theirs to the best of your ability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's the same as acting. Same as acting and playing a role. Actors might do research for that role. Mm-hmm. So they can be well-equipped to play it. You want to have a conversation. You want to get as much information as you can and then accurately do what you got to do. That's just part of being an MC.
Right.
To me, again.
Yeah. And you obviously haven't shied away from long songs in your career from the very beginning. Is it harder to write a song that's 7 or 8 minutes long than one that's 3 or 4?
I'm extremely long-winded. I'm probably, I'm to my detriment sometimes.
Yeah. Nice. So it just kind of comes out.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to earlier. They told me I'd give them their 3 singles and I could do whatever I wanted with the rest of the album. To me, that meant go make a 10-minute record. Since people are telling you there's a certain structure and song has to be a certain length, I just disagreed with that.
Mm-hmm.
I was defiant from the jump.
I can see that. So what I wanted to ask about, are you in that mood yet? The song that leads off Mood Music 2. There's this moment in it where, you know, you talk about, oh, I want another child, my current son doesn't feel like he's mine. And then you have this moment where you rap, okay, I'm having second thoughts, you know, engineer, can you erase that?
I know it sounds sick, the idea of having another kid, this one, it really feel like it's his. It's the truth, and I hate that fact. Wait, shouldn't have said that, I take that back. Look, I apologize, let's rewind this whole story like C4, just erase that track.
And it's such a powerful moment, but obviously, you know, it's rhymed, you had to listen to the mix, like there was forethought put in it.
Yeah.
Was that a section you actually had second thoughts about keeping? Was that where that kind of moment came from?
Yeah, very, very much in the moment. and passing thought. It passed very quickly. No, that wasn't too much to share. It was exactly what was happening in that time, in that moment in space. Mm-hmm. And an artist got a vent. You got a vent.
Yeah.
There was a lot of venting earlier in that stage of my career.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have, from the very beginning, your family, you know, your parents and your grandparents are characters in your songs. You know, from the word go. Was that ever weird for them?
No. No. Well, at least not very many people expressed it.
Mm-hmm.
I may have had that conversation very early on with a select few, but not widespread at all.
They just, you know, part of the price of knowing a rapper.
Well, I mean, for as much as I divulge, it's filtered. Mm-hmm. It is filtered.
You said that in one song. I forget what. I have it buried in one of these pieces of paper somewhere. Something to the effect of, I'm only showing what I want you to see of myself.
Let me tell you this about Joe. I only say what I want you to hear. You'll only see what I want to show.
It just feels like so much because so many other people give so little.
Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of give the impression of being, you know, completely open and unfiltered and this is me, while what you're actually doing is kind of feeding out what you want people to see? It just seemed like kind of a delicate balance.
Yeah. I mean, everything is not for everyone. You have to be guarded at some point. Some things have to be sacred. You can't get on a record and start just having word vomit. No, it's a certain responsibility that comes with being an MC. Mm-hmm. And certain things need to be protected. Certain things do not. So I share whatever I'm at liberty to, always, always, when it comes to myself. But when you start talking about the well-being of other people, yeah, you should probably be filtered.
There have been a few times when that kind of split. I think one that jumped out to me was the third in the series of Ordinary Love Shit 3.
Mm-hmm.
Just because even on other songs that have been personal and to the extent we can figure it out, especially about certain people, there were almost never names.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one where you named names, including the name of the, you know, ball player, you know, you said your girlfriend at the time cheated on you with.
Yeah.
She said she ain't seen you since she landed, and for days she been blowing up your phone like a stalker. And all I could do was laugh at myself as I thought, why is old girl sucking off Derek Ward? Fuss said we was...
What was the purpose of putting real names in that?
It was real people.
Tune.
It was real people, real happenstances.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly was not about to be the only one to feel the effect and the brute of this one. No. And again, rappers are going to express themselves mm-hmm. somehow. So I laid it, not certain that I would ever put it out. So that's why the real names were there, because I laid it to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's released or not is an entirely separate conversation. So I laid it and I sat down and I let my team hear it and we listened carefully and I said, okay, should this go out? And it was maybe two no's, and the rest were, yeah, it's good music, and I'm always going to side with the music. And I wasn't censoring anything. I felt I had been totally disregarded up to that point, which is why this song came to fruition.
And, you know, I remember seeing this at the time and seeing, at least on the outside, that this kind of marked a change, first of many, in audiences for you. Which is back in, I think it was 06, the New York Times reviewed Mood Music 2.
We'll link to the January 2006 New York Times review of Mood Music 2 in this episode's show notes at thecyphershow.com.
Did you notice a change in your career and how people looked at you and how people talked about you once that happened?
On some fronts, there were some people that were shocked that the music was so candid. From the gentleman that had all of this success with Pump It Up and Fire. And you just had people that wanted that style and that brand of music.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a first for a lot of people. I don't think it was very common to hear MCs over these introspective style beats, with these dark kind of, why is he even sharing this type of feel
right.
to the verses? So, I don't know. It made different people feel differently, but it worked.
Yeah.
Like it was indeed a community of people that enjoyed hearing this honest, brash style of music.
Right. And it made it to the newspaper record.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Moon Music 3 is my favorite of the bunch, personally. Okay. And the intro of it, of Hiatus, with, you know, all the phone messages and mm-hmm. people trying to get in touch with you.
Message deleted. Next new message.
Yo, nigga, B, I've been trying to call you up again. Nigga, B, I've been trying to call you too. You've been doing shit last time. You bullshitting around, dodging them phone calls, nigga. You trying to do some work on the web.
Message deleted.
It paints a picture of someone who was really isolated at the time the stuff was being written and created. What was your actual mind frame at the time you were?
I'm always isolated, with the exception of a few of my close friends and loved ones. Mm-hmm. My circle is my circle. I'm not just out there that way now. Mm-hmm. But no, again, we made Moon Music 3 with my friends and my loved ones, kind of the people that have always been present for me. So Moon Music 3, I think we were talking about recent times, acclimating, adjusting, acquiescing, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's Dear Diary on there, which is a different kind of diss song.
Dear Diary's great.
Yeah. I agree. And it's a diss song that doesn't take the approach of I'm going to
But why is it a diss song?
Well, how would you characterize it?
I'm not certain that I know how I would characterize it. Well, but if we're characterizing it as a diss song, I would love to know why we say it's a diss song.
Well, what I was going to say is it's not one in the sense of I'm going to say all your weaknesses that I, you know or discovered and, you know, make them rhyme. It's more saying I'm disappointed in you and getting at someone that way.
With my girl late night about you. The shit only hurts because she was right about you. She run around wanting to shoot you, the fair one. I keep telling her chill, I don't care none. I got another side I never showed to you. The side where everybody is disposable. See, relationship.
Yeah, I don't think that's a diss. But my interpretation is skewed in that department. My friends tell me.
So how would you, well, yeah, I guess you would know about diss songs. What do you think about the song, looking back on it now?
Love it. It was so forthcoming. Mm-hmm. It was so forthcoming and honest, and I could just hear that gentleman was in a totally different zone. I said the date on the beginning of the song, 10-3-0-7.
10-3-0-7.
Like, you just remember that because, wow, that's a moment. We're going to do this on this date at this time, and we're going to get this out.
You know, there are obviously a bunch of shots at Jay-Z on the record, especially towards the end of Talk to Him. You have that kind of
talk to him,
verse, half verse.
Blazer, loosen up and tie. Nigga fell in love and Superman died. Better learn to cover your ears when the toys pop. I hate your last single when none of your boys rock.
There's a few other things there. Blue Magic.
Oh, that was ventilation.
My admiration turned into aggravation. They say, how you sit so long when you spew plastics? I tell niggas I can't understand it. That's Blue Magic.
I know you didn't think like, oh, I'm going to get... Or maybe you did, but I don't think you thought like, oh, I'm going to get Jay-Z. He's going to hear this and be devastated. Like, what was the purpose of putting those out?
He's going to hear this and be devastated. now, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
No. Again, I'm a 25-year-old, frustrated 26-year-old coming to see that the industry in which I loved and so desperately wanted to be a part of maybe just was not everything I thought it would be. And I was acting out. Mm-hmm. I was acting out. Again, for better or for worse, an artist is going to express themselves. Always. People are always shocked when that happens.
There are a couple of shocking lines on that album in more kind of current events mode. You had that T.I. thing and then the line about Timberland in Danger.
Left the Benz at the deal until the kit was on. I don't feel niggas songs. Nah. So while y'all at the awards, I'm loading up on ratchets. That's the tip I'm on. You know my Puff Daddy all about the Benjamin shit. And turn my back on danger like Timberland did. You heard?
That both just
all
were
that
so
was great.
Recent that I was just like, whoa. Like,
well, we lived in the studio. Mm-hmm. Always recording.
Right.
And that was kind of a badge of, that was a flaunt. Anytime you could be so current in that time was always a flaunt to other MCs. Like, this is how fast this can occur.
Like, you have a rhyme about that, actually.
Yeah.
Right? Sublime saying how current he is.
Mm-hmm. Even when I'm spitting about current events, it's a Sublime saying who's more current than him.
So Send Him Our Love on that album. Big, you know, obviously, tribute to Stack.
Mm-hmm.
To judge by the lyrics, you wrote it right after you heard he was killed.
Yes.
You did.
Yes.
Look.
What up, Ray? Was speechless, I ain't know what to say. Got the call like at 8 a.m. with Nick saying,
what?
You had passed away. I'm like, why niggas stay playing? Your MySpace page playing and started my day aching.
Like Raekwon Stack Bundles Elliott was a rapper from Far Rockaway, Queens, who was part of a crew called Riot Squad. He was murdered on June 11th, 2007, as he entered his apartment building.
What was that like to write and record so quickly while you're still dealing with, hey, my friend died?
Well, that was how I dealt. Mm-hmm. And that was how we dealt. It was such a shocking blow, I think, to all that knew him back then. It was very sudden, and sudden death is always really difficult to deal with. I didn't know anything to do but write and show my face and my respect at the services. That's my guy. I mean, me and him were always, that's just my guy. I don't need to qualify. The people that are familiar, they know. That was my guy.
Well, I mean, we've talked to one or two people on the show over the years who've known him. Skyzoo knew him a little bit when they were growing up.
Friends that I met, you know, I used to be a part of a crew called the Grits. It stood for the greatest rappers in the streets. And it was, you know, we was young, 17, 18, 19. Yeah. And we was all from either Brooklyn or Queens. And Stack was one of the members. And that's how we met. And, you know, he was awesome. Awesome. From day one, he was nice, man. Like, I mean, there's old Stack freestyles that people don't even, you know, would never have heard of. S-T-A-C-K. Y'all faggot ass rappers can't see me. I got broads and like he said, I got gauze and I'm copping like BJs. I got broads and they crying all over me, sounding like freeway. And y'all scared, I could tell. When I put it in the bag, it's going to make your whole fucking block gel. I got shells, y'all should know that. Like, those is all his rhymes, like old rhymes, you know what I mean? Like,
what was he like?
Just a genuine dude. Like, genuine to the point where him and I didn't have the greatest relationship or understanding of one another when we met, but we were able to grow and nurture that relationship, and we were close like the two ones in 11 by the time he passed. We spent a lot of time recording together. We spent a lot of time outside of the studio, and we were similar in a lot of ways. He was a young, hungry, aggressive just MC who wanted to rep his hood and take his hood with him in all of his travels. And we had many of those conversations as well. So, I mean, the irony is the way that he passed in his hood. And
the doorway of his building.
Yeah, that was extremely unfortunate. Yeah. So, I mean, but hopefully some people out there can take something from that and the way the Chinks was murdered, And just try to be a bit more careful.
Lionel Chinks Pickens was, like Stack Bundles, from Far Rockaway and a member of Riot Squad. He was also closely affiliated with French Montana. Chinks was killed in a drive-by shooting in Queens in May 2015.
You were a couple years older than him, right? Just like two or three?
Mm-hmm.
Did that make a big difference in your relationship? I know, you know, it might not seem like much now, but when you're younger, that
not really the age difference. I think the experience. I think Stack, along with Hitch, Ran, I think now even Surf, my guy Trev Rich, now a lot of, if I have experience to offer and something that I think could behoove someone, then I try to offer it. And so because I was signed so young at such an early age, you know, I was this bevy of information for guys like Stack who had some of the same questions that I had coming in.
Do you have music from him that people haven't heard?
No, I do not. I'm not one of those.
Not holding those. It back for.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I know some people who do. Mm-hmm. The people that should have it. I wouldn't be on that list.
Right. I want to talk about kind of the business side of your career for a second. And something that you always did from the very beginning was use the internet to communicate directly with your fans, something that now is sort of taken for granted. What appealed to you about that at first? Why did you jump on that in an era, you know, 2003 or so, when not a ton of artists were, you know, you streaming with their fans or whatever?
Well, back then it was basically my only means to get information or challenge someone else's. Again, that was the time where I had just gotten my record deal and I was being told so many things from so many different people. And I wasn't a street dude, so I wasn't going to go out on the streets and see what was hot and stand on the corner and just do some of the things that I was being advised to. So I went to the internet to get information and to test different music and to gauge and hear other people's opinions and perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned about this community of people that not only existed, but were extremely hungry for music at a much faster pace and clip than we're able to deliver now. So I guess that probably started a lot of the debates or disagreements between Kevin and myself, is that I was so forward thinking, and the industry hadn't quite caught up to that just yet.
I was going to say, what was that like? So you go back to Kevin Lyles, you go back to people at Def Jam, and you say, hey, there's this whole crowd of people out there on the internet, and, you know, here's what they're listening to. Here's what they want. Here's what they think of Joe Budden, you know.
Yeah.
What kind of reaction did that get?
The one that we've all gotten used to. The internet was ignored until you could no longer ignore it.
Mm.
And that was sad. So that was looked upon within a certain light. Nobody gave it much credence at all. But I never left, and the community continued to grow.
Right.
And you could early begin to see the effect that it would eventually have on music.
Yeah, it's interesting. You could, I think, and you probably have traced a straight line from Joe Budden TV, the kind of like short videos you would do of your life.
Nobody hears anything you're saying. You're mad for JoeBuddenTV.com.
Then you need to get yourself a better camera, loser, if you can't hear me.
First of all, don't crack on my camera.
Excuse me?
So, I'm sick as hell.
Yeah, it's like a month.
I 100% have traced the line through.
Love and hip-hop.
Yeah, yes.
So by the time you get to reality TV, I know what this is, having a camera in my face all the time.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of it is good practice. I mean, even my podcast, I knew that eventually I maybe wanted to start in or have a career in broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
Whatever style broadcasting that is, and the podcast would be good practice for that. Joe Budden TV was indeed good practice for what would later come. Today prepares us for tomorrow. I'm a believer in that.
Mm-hmm. And so you were briefly on the Hot 97 morning show in like 2004.
Yeah.
What did you learn being on that level of radio?
It was about 8 months. It was a while.
Wow.
It wasn't too brief.
Yeah. What did you learn being on that level of radio that you kind of took back to, you know, being a recording artist or being a personality?
Again, broadcasting. I took the same style that I had in my music, that kind of honest, straightforward, blunt style, and I brought it to radio, and it was fun. It was fun. We came up with some amazing ideas. Ebro, Envy, Donnell Rawlings, myself, Miss Info. We had a good time. I think that was one of the first times in my, you know, one of the few times in my life I can recall actually being nervous when you're about to start something new. They took this kid who had never done radio in his life and was about to put him in the lead chair on Hot 97's morning show, which is the number one station, and that's the number one drive. That was a bit nerve-wracking, but we did all right.
And then, you know, eventually it got to the point where you couldn't do both.
Yeah, no, we could not do both. Again, yeah. Because so many of the ways that I defied the standard in music was so left back then that it was received a certain way, even though it would eventually grow to be the norm. So while Kevin Lyles was saying you can't sell music and be a radio host, and this was in the midst of Ludacris retiring, not doing radio.
Hot 97.5 station where hip hop lives. Yes, it's the 9 o'clock cut up. Chris Lover Lover in the house. Hit us up 404-741-9750. It's Hot 97.5, the station where blazing hip hop lives. You
know, I'm blowing up to be this huge rap star. It was unheard of and looked at like, why would you do that? Why would you give people that type of access to you? Not knowing that, where did you think the future of music was going?
Right.
It was going to go to instant access, instant gratification. The more you supply and demand, the more you can give and put out there.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be something that would hurt artists. It would eventually help in the long run.
Yeah. And you actually had another show prior to your current podcast, like that My Fucking Show, right?
Which is, yeah, I think similar, that's before.
You know, but that was just you. That wasn't the kind of co-host,
yeah, that
morning
was,
show type model your podcast
That was
is.
Only me. Mic check, 1-2-1-2. Mic check, 1-2-1-2. Your man Jump Off Joe Beezy. One Quarter to Slaughter, best rap in the World Wide Web, and your host for My Fucking Show, which is appropriate because it's my fucking show. So who else would be the host? Again, trying to practice for broadcasting at home on my computer. We just had a lot of funny conversations sometimes, and I would record them and we'd upload them. This is before I ever knew what a podcast was or how big that field was.
Yeah.
Even though they're growing, it's growing now. I see it's become a pretty cool thing to do now. Everybody has a podcast, and it's great, again, that people can get that just instant access and hear whatever they want to hear from their favorite people.
Yeah. And you were one of the very first people, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but one of the first people to sign a sort of digital-only record deal.
Yeah.
When you did Amalgam Digital.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, again, I've always stuck to, I think the future of music is digital.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tried to stay ahead of that curve.
And how did that end up working out?
Not too well. We had our disagreements and eventually had to go our separate ways, which is how I ended up on E1.
Mm-hmm.
That contract was sold to E1, which I had to finalize.
Wow.
So I delivered on that.
And now your new album, which we'll talk about in a minute, is your first sole independent project, just you and a digital distributor.
Yes.
Why not another label situation?
No, I didn't. No, I was on a label. I've played both sides and got all the information I needed to get. I think this is the best way for me to do my business.
Mm-hmm.
I always challenge people to tell me why they would do it a different way. Like, I can't necessarily see why I would be so eager to sign my rights away not today, no.
And what about television? You know, you've been on Love and Hip Hop, you're on Couples Therapy.
Happy for you, congratulations. I told you that you would go out there and do well.
Whose hair is this?
It's apparently a friend of mine. A friend of mine was here the other night.
I'm adding rocks, and there was a friend of yours on my bed the other night.
Nothing took place in this room outside of two friends having a conversation.
Sheets have changed. I've been gone for 3 days, Joe. You don't change your sheets unless I change them for you.
The sheets were dirty.
Oh, dirty. Where are the pillowcases?
The pillowcases were dirty as well.
So why you guys were together, and then she was there.
She was also on the show.
On the show.
The two of us were on the show. And, you know, I said to Caitlin, I think I may have unresolved feelings for my ex.
And then I said, go explore that.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And that was fun.
So being on reality TV brings you kind of a different sort of fame, get recognized while walking down the street.
A lot of visibility.
That only a handful of rappers have. What was it like to kind of jump into that world?
That was a bit awkward at first when your demographic changed like that. I had 70-year-old people recognizing me. Shit, that's happening now still. So from watching that show, whether it be Love and Hip Hop or Couples Therapy,
right.
I had no idea how many people, how large that audience was. But I got used to it. I got used to it pretty quickly. And I'm an introvert, so I'd like to not be noticed.
Right.
So
pick the hell of a career for an introvert.
Yeah. Well, I always wanted to be recognized for my talents, not so much recognizable.
Right. You know, it's funny because you did kind of, you know, the Ustream thing, live streaming thing that, and now you have sort of apps like Periscope that mirror that, but in a much more user-friendly kind of
yes.
way.
Even though I do think they should bring Blog TV back. I loved Blog TV.
Yeah.
But Periscope is great. I'm on Periscope a lot.
I know. Did that, and but you feel more comfortable on it since you had all this practice of like, I'm going to live stream, let's go.
Well, no. One of the reasons that I began live streaming in the first place was because I was so comfortable. I felt like it was an advantage that I had because I was so honest in the music. I wasn't perpetrating myself to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
That was a one-up for me. I could cut a camera on in my house. I could cut a camera on with my girlfriend. I could cut a camera on with my kid and not be giving out some false image or something.
And you have kind of these different fan bases now, in a way. You have people who know you for music, people who recognize you from television. Now, I think people who know you maybe solely as that guy from the podcast. How do you balance that? How do you kind of give people who know you from each enough content? Is that something you think about?
No. I mean, I'm myself on all of these platforms. I'm myself on my podcast. There's plenty of people that don't necessarily enjoy my music that still kind of enjoy the podcast and think it's pretty funny and informative. Mm-hmm. So I don't, that's not unusual for me. It's not weird. You know, my mom raised me on whatever attracts, and you want to do as much as you can in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I go by that. So I want to do it all. I want to rap. I want to do a morning show. I want to do a podcast. I want to act. I want to battle rap. I want anything that I can do. I want to be a sports analyst. Anything that I can do that's within the realm of possibility, I want to go give it a shot.
Well, you certainly got, I think your whole rap career is kind of an audition for a sportscaster.
Make me put that tool to use. And these niggas would be in the game shaking like Mahmoud Abdul-Rahouf. Snakes in the trenches, I beat those. Get injured, end up like Grant Hill on the bench in your street clothes. Talk about he real, got it quick with a Glock. But like Kirk Thomas, he ain't good for shit on the block.
Some would say.
So many sports references in there. I often, you know, find myself kind of being, what's that about again? Looking it up real quick.
Yeah, sometimes when I listen to those verses, it brings me back. I like that some of those verses have time stamps that way.
I was going to ask about that. Is there a downside to that? Do you feel like, oh, it dates it if I reference a particular thing in the news?
Well, that's the downside. The downside is you're dating it. Mm-hmm. So how you interpret dating, pros or cons, depends on how you're going to take it.
Right. I mean, I guess that's been in rap since the beginning, right? People shouting out what year the song has been recorded on.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think timestamps are always bad. Mm-hmm. I do see how if it's just your music is oversaturated with it, then an entire section of your catalog is now timestamped.
Right.
So I try not to do that.
Right. One more thing kind of business-wise, which is like with Slaughterhouse.
Hey, yo, Joey, what you said? 24, right? Cool, I got you.
Slaughterhouse is a supergroup consisting of Joe, Joel Ortiz, Crooked Eye, and Royce da 5'9". The group formed in 2008 after the four of them, as well as our episode 82 guest Nino Bless, appeared on Joe's song Slaughterhouse, which gave the group its name. Slaughterhouse released their self-titled debut album in 2009. They signed to Eminem's Shady Records in 2011 and released their follow-up Welcome to Our House the following year. The group's long-awaited third album, tentatively titled Glass House, is reportedly almost finished.
In the Interscope family. So you start out on Def Jam, have a long sort of interlude, during mm-hmm. which I've read you say you thought you kind of had unfinished business in the major label system.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of come back to it, this time in a group. What was that sort of full circle thing like?
That was God's planning. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have mapped it to be any better than that. But that was fun. And that, even that came with its ups and downs. Mm-hmm. To be back and to be back with new information and just tooled differently is good. So you're able to try some things differently. So that's cool. And I'm back with three brothers who are familiar with, you know, my background. I'm familiar with theirs. All phenomenal MCs. It's good to have company on that roller coaster.
Right. And being in a group, though, what it does is ties what Joe Budden does to the career of three other people.
Yes.
That's something you've thought about, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Well, that's something we all had to think about.
Have you adjusted yourself, your life, how you talk in public?
Yeah, no. When you I love those guys. So you want to always take them into account. Mm-hmm. You want to take your loved ones into account, period. So
right. There's
been a few decisions that have wavered a certain way because of my genuine love and care for my contemporaries.
For the new record, right, three... The opening track. Wakes up, still sleep, wake up. Bitches know the stakes up since I beat my case up. Hip hop, shitless. Look at these bastard men dressed. I'm just taking back what's old and adding interest. Maybe just quotes from Hiatus.
Yeah. 2 years, wakes up, still sleep, wake up. Girl gon' break up, my right cake up. Friends came, friends left.
Bullshit is endless. Then next, hip hop, really not impressed. Maybe what was the purpose of that? Are you trying to kind of draw parallels between Mood Music 3 and this?
No, I got a parallel in the mind state of recording that. So now I wasn't necessarily trying to draw one, but the beat and the environment in the studio with that beat just blasting, that's immediately where I went.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that on this album where I just go back to a certain place where that particular beat took me to. Happened on 3. Happens on... I Want to Know with Stacey Barth. Happens when I Gotta Ask.
Right, where you reference the music series.
You're dropping some of the dopest mixtapes that you ever heard. And it's all- There's those types of name drops and references all throughout this album as kind of a way to pay homage to all of the people and the hip-hop that inspired me to make it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And, you know, one of the things that really caught my ear on the record was, I got to ask, just the sample on it, the sample from Into the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, did you know the musical that the sample was from?
I did, because I asked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't able to pinpoint it, no.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm assuming you worked in the Hard Knock Life reference. From standing on the corners bopping, to driving some of the hottest cars New Yorkers ever seen, for dropping some of the hottest verses rappers ever heard, from the dope spot with the smoke block, clinging the murder scene. You know me well from nice. From standing in the cypher rocking, to driving some of the hottest cars New Jersey's ever seen, to dropping some of the dopest mixtapes that you ever heard. And it's all courtesy of weed, a couple perks, and lean. Baby, this is like a nod to another song that references a musical, or was it not that specific? It
was. Yeah, no, they were similar. Again, that brought me right back to there, and I saw the video playing in my head, and it was just a great, I hadn't even realized how old that song was until I sat and did some math and was like, wow, you know, my kid is 15. He probably has no idea how powerful this Hard Knock Life song was. I don't know if he ever heard it. So while that seems like yesterday for some of us, you know, some people, it was new information.
Yeah. And, you know, there's Idols on that record, obviously talking about hip hop of the past, which is, you know, on other projects you've dealt with, you know, you're sort of reminiscing about hip hop and talking about your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
You have a line about one of our past guests that kind of stuck out to me, which is Nice and Smooth, where you sort of talk about the roles each of them had in the group. Smooth B was dope, Greg Nice had character. Before I ever knew Image would even matter, bro. Ice Cube raised. And I guess I was just trying to draw a connection from there. So you, even as a kid, you were sort of aware, like, hey, there are different guys in the group. They have different purposes.
Yeah.
Did you take that knowledge and use it in Slaughterhouse? Like, think about what's the role of each of the guys?
Well, not that we even had to pay so much thought to that, because people can't help but be themselves. So when you form a group, everybody is going to naturally be themselves and get into their comfort role or their discomfort role.
Mm-hmm.
So Royce immediately, you just knew, you could just tell Royce is a studio rat. The studio rat, that's a talent, everyone is not. Crook, one of the best technicians, Joel and his stage presence, everybody was great in an area that someone else was not in. You had no choice but to just be a sponge and soak up, check your ego at the door and just soak up as much information as you can.
And you have Sirius on that record as a duet with Joel. Ask about your boy, they'll tell you I'm not the fella. Tomato sauce, whoever try and shred up my mozzarella. I guess it's in my jeans, no prints if I got the poke out. Man, let these niggas reach, I'm Iverson with the blowout. Sometimes you've had duets with him before, both within the context of Slaughterhouse songs. See, I'm a on-stage rock star, backstage porn star, Chloe on a Kardashian, Courtney on the OnStar, Joey Rabbit stumbling out the telly in a torn bra, they dribble on my balls in the whip, now that's a sports car. On individual songs, like on Warfare, where you're kind of trading parts back and forth. Track just started, no need to rewind it. Me, I'm bringing fresh air back, I'm Rat Heimlich. Got them all sick, is that comic? Ew, you nasty. Man, I smack your skin if you feel you pass me. It's like we lions against lassies. Niggas ain't nice, they lying to float ass cheeks. Come on the beat. Why him out of all the group members? Why is he the one that you kind of like literally trade bars back and forth with so much?
I'm not sure. Joel is the first member of the group that I met when we had our exchange on Warfare. Sometimes just how we get around to a song, we both will feel a way about and want to get in and out. We think the song will call for it. Crooked and Royce, they both have very, very much similar voices and tones.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to keep them separate. And it makes sense. Joel and I, we're both from the same hood, same area, basically. So
right.
It's a good time.
Absolutely. And, you know, you did a show at B.B. King's not too long ago where you said, this is the last Joe Budden show.
In May 2016, Joe tweeted out a string of tour dates and then said, quote, to whom it may concern, those are the last Budden shows ever. Thanks to all of you who helped me live out my dreams.
And there's been some ambiguity as to what that means.
That meant that it was the last Joe Budden show, and I was moving forward under the name Rage anytime I would tour. I was solely going to tour with A-Rap, and then that was going to be it.
Until, okay.
Yeah, I was advised against that.
You advised against that setup.
I was going to tour as Rage and the Machine with A-Rap and no longer tour as Joe Budden, just because I thought it was time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't do it, so there's no point in talking about it.
Can you talk at all about what was behind that idea kind of falling apart?
No, because it was too many different things came into play.
Mm, that makes sense. You know, No Love Lost and the two projects that followed it, Some Love Lost and All Love Lost, all kind of hover around this idea of breaking down and playing with, like we were talking about playing with phrases before, playing with and exploring the phrase No Love Lost.
Mm-hmm.
No love lost. No love found.
Even in your absence, my feelings are heightened. Though I know some love's lost, it's not on my end.
I learned a long time ago in life that not much is fair. So no love lost, but not much is there. Deja vu, this happened rapidly before. Every day's a constant struggle, and you're a casualty of war. Which could only equal good and fact. So love isn't lost. I know exactly where I put it at.
You know, how can you look at that? What is, you know, how do we use it? What are some sort of maybe hidden meanings of it? Do you remember the moment at which you were like, no love lost, that's an idea I can really dig into? Is that kind of how it happened? No?
No, because I had the idea so long ago, probably way before I even put the actual plan into effect.
Mm-hmm.
My short-term memory isn't that great.
So after all the twisting around of that phrase, are you just done with it? You can't, how do you feel about that?
Well,
phrase
yeah,
now?
I mean, one of the phrases is fine. We just don't need to put any more music out under that premise.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've loved enough. We've loved and not loved enough. So it's time to derail.
Right. All Love Lost, the final album in that series, has these sort of parallel themes of relationships, romantic relationships, and hip hop, your love of hip hop, and you know how it, the community
my three
around
loves,
it.
Woman, music, family.
Right. And actually, by the time you get to the end of the record, you have one track where you're sort of talking about both two of them simultaneously.
Yes.
And that's kind
love
of the
for
culmination.
You. Great record, love for you.
You liked me better before you knew my history, before you knew who I was. That's when reaching our potential felt likely. Nobody liked me. Besides, see, if I stop being who I am, I'll stray toward who I might be. But you gotta look inside each song. That's where I proved it was really insight all along. Be it all, so
can you talk about making that record a little bit? That kind of like how every line has to fit two contexts?
Well, it was the last record that we created for the album. It's when we were going back and forth trying to decide if the album was done or not. And I didn't feel it had its cap, a cap on the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I got with Boy Wonder, and when I got that beat, I just let the pen flow and I treated the record as if we're doing a Mood Music record. And once I was about 40 bars in, because there's so many bars on that record,
right.
I read it back and I just saw that was the course that it took. I didn't plan it that way.
Wow.
That's just how it wrote. That's how it wrote itself out. And once I saw that, I continued it. It was real easy. Once you get the idea and the concept and see and kind of have a feel for what you're about to do, the doing, the executing is normally the simplest part.
And on that record, there's the song Love, I'm Good.
Mm.
And in it, it's appropriate enough to talk, given that we're in Harlem, which is, you know, to put euphemistically, a changing neighborhood. You talk about the gentrification of hip-hop.
Or did my wordplay confuse her? Now I see it with Young Thug and Future. Like, what did you niggas do to her now? My generalization is this generation, the imminent state of the gentrification, desensitization. I call her C.M. Marvin.
Which is kind of a interesting, somewhat loaded term to use. What did you mean by that?
What do you mean? Why is that loaded?
Well,
what's loaded about gentrification and hip hop?
Well, I think it has, you know, both economic and racial connotations and things like that. I was just curious what you meant by it.
No, it wasn't a racial undertone at all. It was more of a business aspect in regards to what was happening, who was being pushed to the forefront, who was being pushed out, how we received music. How was that changing? How everything was changing. So that was gentrification. And yeah, I didn't mean anything about race.
You know, you have a song called Spring Training, and it gets to some of the stuff about your image, some of the stuff about business we were talking about, all tied up in this one line. where you say you think the fans are buying music, I'm selling hope. And I found that so interesting. What do you mean that you're offering hope to people?
I don't understand how some of these questions are worded. That question is worded funny. Mm-hmm. There's no implication that comes with. How do you quantify what someone receives from your music? Mm-hmm. Is it in an album sale? Is it in a stream? Like, I think that's more so what that is. So when you say you're selling hope, know that you can't. Someone else, it's impossible for them to quantify. Like, you just can't. So why do we attempt to?
Right. It definitely makes sense. So I did want to ask about one specific thing, which is you have a line about DJ AM and Travis Barker. You say, you know, when DJ AM's plane crashed, I was sitting near Travis Barker.
Because when AM died, I was staring at Travis Barker. Wishing there was something I could say to make him cheer up. And so I prayed, and he teared up. I ain't want to see him go through that. The same shit that I feel, just never show you that.
Adam, DJ AM Goldstein was an influential American DJ, remixer, and musician. Blink-182 drummer Travis Barker was not only AM's bandmate in the duo Travis DJ AM, but they were also the only two survivors of a 2008 plane crash that killed the other four people on board. DJ AM died in August 2009 from suspected drug overdose.
And I was never quite sure whether that was like literal. Sort of metaphor.
No, that was literal.
That was literal.
Yeah, that was literal. I was there. Slaughterhouse was there. We were recording. He's shared about it in various interviews as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was heavy. Needless to say, the session was canceled at that point.
Sure. Imagine. That's insane. Yeah, I always took that. Well, I was never sure, obviously, whether that was a metaphor.
No, I get it.
Staring death in the face or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, no.
Wow. So Rage and the Machine, by the time people listen to this, will be just about out.
The album comes out Friday, October 21st.
What are your plans now? There's a tour behind it.
Yeah, we're going to hit the road. We're going to hit the road and cycle, get in front of the faces of these fans. We'll do a U.S. run. We'll do overseas run. We'll do Europe. We'll run around, do London. Just hit the road for a little bit. I've never dropped a project and then just hit the road and stayed there. I've never done it.
And can we look forward to any more big kind of... I noticed that a bunch of your songs have like kind of interpolate or sample stuff from heavy rock bands.
Right? I love rock.
Let's talk about the struggle. Let's talk about the pain. Some people say they love you, but that don't mean a thing. But what hurts more, the act of getting cut off or realizing that your 2 cents wasn't worth more? No.
Why do that? You said you love...
I love rock and roll. I love the instrumentation, the feeling, the passion of it. So I just love it.
You do not shy away from ending songs with guitar solos.
Yeah, no. It's music. At the end of the day, I'm always on the side of the music.
Mm.
Who doesn't love a good guitar solo?
Right.
And why? What do you enjoy out of music if you don't enjoy a guitar solo?
Definitely. One or two final things. There are a couple things that you mentioned repeatedly in your catalog that I just kind of wanted to talk about, which is you mentioned Knight Rider a lot.
Worried about my car and the kid, what up, Michael Knight? Stevie made me laugh. I remember Knight Rider. Kid used to save his ass.
Was that one of your favorite shows growing up?
No. Oddly enough, I hated Knight Rider. It was just one of the more popular shows growing up. I hated Knight Rider. But I did get a good laugh every time I watched. It was funny for me. Mike would always be getting his ass beat and Kid was coming save the day. Every time. I think that goes unnoticed. There's a few things in our early 80s sitcoms, our 80s sitcoms that just go unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
The bad guy in Inspector Gadget, we never saw him.
Right.
I'll get you next time, Gadget. Next time.
Never saw him. The babysitter for the Muppet Babies.
Right, you'd see her socks.
Yeah.
Now, what's this all about?
Well, we decided that...
Today is Nanny's Day.
You know, like Mother's Day.
Thanks, kids.
And just what do we do on Nanny's Day?
Tell her, Kimmy.
Well,
They need to fix some of these unsolved mysteries from back then.
Maybe that could be your next TV show.
That might be a good podcast.
Yeah. And also, you mentioned the Saw movies a whole ton.
Now find a nigga better than that. I walked out the movie store, started setting my trap. Fiends treat the hood like it's Saw Part 2 because they just looking for needles.
I love Saw.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. Have you seen them all?
Yeah, I've seen them all.
Wow.
I've seen them all. I just enjoyed the psychology behind Saw.
Mm-hmm.
Even if every one of them weren't so greatly executed, I really enjoyed that psychology.
You know, finally, I did want to ask about maybe my personal favorite song of yours. I've always been a fan of the long, sort of rappity rap ones. And Dumb Out has been a favorite.
No name should be mentioned with mine unless you talking big pun in his prime. Maybe 96J before Dane was throwing money around. Or Tupac without Humpty around. Or 50 before M. Nas talking like a gun in a song. Cam'ron during Children of the Corn. Beans before the cops came through and tried to grill him. I'm talking 9-5, Big L before they killed him. M before 8 Mile, Shine for the jail shit. Cannabis, no album out before the L shit. Talking about Kiss, DMX when he was fucking with Coke. Or Cuban Links.
And so I guess just anything you remember about making that song in particular?
Dumb Out is a fan favorite. Dumb Out was birthed from a discussion that I was having with some friends of mine that they were telling me how amazing this rapper was and how the rapper would kill me and crush me.
Can you say the name?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't, but that's where it came from. So to this day, when I see those gentlemen, we always bring up Dumb Out because after that song, they both called me and was like, yeah, I take it all back.
Nice. And, you know, obviously we've talked a bit about, you know, business career-wise, any big moves for you on that front, any new, other than the podcast, any new ventures, new worlds that Joe Budden's going to get into?
Yeah. Me and my acting coach, we've been hard at these auditions. I want to hit the screen. I want to explore artistry in as many different ways as I can. Naturally, there's the podcast. We want to grow and mature that. Hi, Ian. How you doing? What else is there? We want to continue to put music out, continue to hit the road. We got some merch coming. I got some cool pilot shows that I'm pitching. So hopefully we can just continue to get closer and closer to what the end goal is.
And what is the end goal?
Well, why would I say that here?
All Joe Budden all the time.
Hopefully.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you, Joe Budden, so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
I've been a huge fan of Joe's work since Mood Music 2 came out, and I was thrilled to be able to have a chance to sit down with him and figure out what was behind some of the songs that have meant so much to me over the years. I think it's fair to say you've heard Joe address stuff in this interview, both about his music and about his career path, that you won't get anywhere else. Join us next week when our guest will be TC Islam, the adopted son of Afrika Bambaataa and an influential member of the Zulu Nation. Even though you probably don't know his name, unless you've heard his influential work as a founder of the hip-step movement, you're going to want to listen to this show to get the inside scoop on the Zulu Nation and how it was rocked by the scandals surrounding Afrika Bambaataa. We also talk about the early days of the Zulu Nation and how TC used his obsession with dubstep to form a whole new genre. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow if you enjoy the program, where you can help us out with as little as a dollar a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
Who doesn't love a good guitar solo?
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
He's going to hear this and be devastated.
Our music is by 42 Ghost.
Yeah, it's good music.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
We've loved enough.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Ground Up Radio.
Start talking about the well-being of other people.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Definitely.